Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In this program, we examine the relationship between world currencies and state power.
The dollar is the only currency in the world that performs all of the possible roles of an international currency and does so in every part of the world.
Monetary rivalry is a fact of life in the world economy, says Benjamin Cohen, professor of international political economy at the University of California and author of several books on the topic of currency internationalization. Cohen discussed his most recent book entitled Currency Power: Understanding Monetary Rivalry during a seminar organized by the IMF's Institute for Capacity Development. I began by asking him to explain the concept of currency internationalization.
Well, since we don't have a world currency, but we do have a world economy, we need to have currencies that can be used for international transactions of various kinds. And that's where internationalization comes in. Certain national currencies come to be used for international purposes. It's a result of a kind of competition among currencies, and the market decides which currencies will be used internationally. And there are three major considerations that the markets are looking for. One is relative stability of value, a well-managed currency. Secondly, a big network of transactions. So they're looking for the currency of a country that is large and has a large volume of international trade. And thirdly, they're looking for a currency with deep financial markets so that amounts of that currency can be held with a certain assurance about its longer-term stability.
Mm. And so what is the relationship between currency and power?
Well, an international currency plays many roles. And some of these roles add significantly to the power of a country that issues it. Power itself is a mysterious notion and is a contested notion in academic literature.
You mean political power?
Political power, the power of the state in relation to other states. And what we have to understand is that power has at least two different meanings, one of which is the one that most people would think of, influence. That is to say, I can get you to do something that you wouldn't otherwise do. That's influence. That's certainly one meaning of power. But an equally important meaning of power is the ability to do what you want without having to worry about what others prefer. Influence can be jokingly described as letting others have your way. But the alternative meaning, autonomy, can be understood as others letting you have your way. And in international monetary affairs, that's a valuable source of strength, to be able to do what you want, to act independently, not to have to worry about what others do. And that's particularly important in the context of the balance of payments. If a country runs a deficit in the balance of payments, most countries have to undertake painful adjustment. If a country is able to delay or deflect those costs of adjustment, that's a form of power. It gives the country extra degrees of freedom in dealing with the rest of the world. An international currency adds to that ability of the country to deflect or delay adjustment costs. It does so because it can pay for deficits with its own money, the United States being, of course, the prime example. No other country could have run deficits for so long and on such a scale. But the United States can do it because the rest of the world is willing to accept dollars in payment for those deficits, for the excess of imports over exports. The rest of the world accepts these dollars, welcomes these dollars as a desirable asset. And they hold it as an investment medium, or central banks hold it in their reserves. And to that extent, that gives the United States greater autonomy to act independently around the world.
Hmm. Why has the U.S. dollar become so widely used over the years? And do you think that that's going to change, perhaps, in seeing that the U.S. economy is playing a slightly less dominant role in the global economy?
Well, what makes the dollar so attractive, first and foremost, of course, was the fact that the U.S. economy was the dominant world economy after World War II. The U.S. GDP was roughly one-third of the world GDP at the end of World War II. U.S. manufacturing was half of the world's manufacturing capacity at that time. It naturally followed that the dollar would be attractive. The dollar continues to be attractive, even though the United States is now no longer the leading trading nation in the world. China has a larger volume of international trade than the United States does. And China's GDP is rapidly approaching that of the United States. But what makes the dollar most attractive is the U.S. financial market, and in particular the market for government bonds. There is no market in the world that provides the kind of depth, breadth, and resiliency that the U.S. government bond market does. The daily turnover is as much as $500 billion a day. Now, that means that the dollar offers liquidity advantages that no other currency can possibly offer.
Hmm. So what is the dominant international currency right now?
Well, I've written about what I like to call a currency pyramid. And at the very peak is the dollar. The dollar is the only currency in the world that performs all of the possible roles of an international currency and does so in every part of the world. It has universal scope. It has universal domain. There are two or three other currencies that are one tier down that perform some or all of these roles, but on a more regional basis. And potentially the Chinese currency, the renminbi or yuan, which is still just a minnow, but its international use is growing quite rapidly.
And would you say that that reflects the global balance of power these days in the world?
Well, it clearly reflects the fact that China has achieved a degree of autonomy that's almost unprecedented. Remember that China has accumulated reserves. At its peak a year or so ago, it was over $4 trillion. That's $4,000 billion. That's a lot of money, even in this day and age. That's a lot of money. Their reserves are now down to about 3.4, but that's still a lot of money. And what that does is to give the Chinese a great deal of room for maneuvering in the world. And the Chinese have been using that to promote their currency as an alternative to the dollar.
Hmm. Do you think that there's a role to play for international institutions to sort of try and maintain a healthy balance of world currencies? Or do you think that the world would be a better place with one more dominant currency?
Well, there are many people who would like to see one currency for the world. But the question then is, who is going to control it? Who is going to govern and manage it? Because obviously, whoever controls the issue of an international currency, a world currency, has enormous power. And that's an extraordinarily difficult political issue. Just think of the European Union and the 19 countries that participate in the Eurozone. And think about the difficulties that they have experienced in trying to manage their joint money. Then multiply that by about 8 for all the membership of the International Monetary Fund. Can you imagine what political difficulties could be encountered in trying to manage a single world currency? I consider a single world currency something that is not going to happen in my lifetime. I don't even think it's going to happen in the lifetime of my grandchildren. It's simply beyond the realm of what is possible in today's political world system, that is to say, in the system of national states that are sovereign and are unlikely to submerge their sovereignty and give over this kind of power to a central bank, a global central bank, an enhanced IMF or whatever other institution that might be created. The best we can hope for is that an international institution like the International Monetary Fund can help governments to manage their individual currencies and the relations between those currencies more efficiently. And more smoothly. But of course, politically, it's very difficult for the IMF to enforce any control over sovereign governments. The best they can do is to act as an honest broker, as a mediator between governments. So we're always going to have to live, as long as we have a political system of world politics that rests on the principle of state sovereignty defined by territorial states, as long as we live in that kind of a world, we're going to live with an imperfect monetary system. And the best we can hope for is that an international institution can help to smooth some of the rough edges.
That was Benjamin Cohen, professor of international political economy at the University of California and author of Currency Power, Understanding Monetary Rivalry, published by Princeton University Press. You can hear more podcasts like this one at imf.org or on SoundCloud or iTunes or any of your favorite podcast apps. Just search for IMF Podcasts.